You inspired me since our last session. I ran into my colleague, who is a young woman with a DMA not long ago, probably early 30s, and she's a terrific jazz pianist. And I said, you know, I just want to put myself, I mean, I asked about, because she wants to play for me, she's preparing a classical program. And I said, well, I would really like to finally put myself on there and say, I got to take jazz lessons. And she was so excited. I said, we were both so excited. It's like what you and I have been trying to say. One of the reasons we're doing this is to inspire professional development. I mean, we all are works in progress, right? So
yeah,
whenever we can gain from one another, it's so exciting. We're the lucky ones.
Well, hello, everyone. It's Tim Topham here. I'm a music teacher, speaker, and the founder of topmusic.co, and this is the Topcast. It's great to have you here. I so enjoy hanging out with you each week, and I hope you enjoy today's episode. It's a little bit different, actually, today. I get a little bit nervous when I do this sometimes, because today you're actually going to be a fly on the wall of me having a piano lesson. As you know, I'm a massive believer in professional development and improving our skills as teachers to make us better teachers for our students. And one of the best ways to do that, one of the ways that I have learned the most through my entire career of music teaching, is by having lessons myself. I've also learned a lot by learning new instruments. I don't know how many of you have taken up a new instrument as an adult and tried to learn it. You suddenly realize exactly what it's like to not be able to play an instrument at the beginning. And so I remember some time ago, actually, I was asked to teach year 7 and 8 trumpet and trombone, and I'd never played a brass instrument in my life. So I spent a whole summer learning how to play them and trying to keep ahead of my students. And it was a fascinating and eye-opening experience to do that. And so I really encourage people to do that as a great activity, even if it's a harmonica or an accordion, or it can be an unusual instrument or a small instrument or something similar to piano if you're a piano teacher, or something in the family of the instrument that you teach, or something completely different. Go and try play the drums or the guitar if you're an oboe player or something. It's an amazing experience. But that aside is not what I'm talking about today, actually. What I am talking about today is just having instruction in your own instrument with a teacher that's more experienced than you. The skills you'll gain and the experience that you will have will give you so much depth and richness that it can add to your own teaching of your students. You'll pick up things that you can then use with your students. You will improve your own performance and confidence as a performer and player and someone that can demonstrate music and know exactly how to approach certain pieces of music and things like that. So even if it's just getting lessons on the music that you're teaching your students from another teacher, that can be incredibly valuable. It doesn't have to be that you need to start playing some Chopin ballades or something like that. No, no, no. You can just do your perhaps in the exam systems or the competition systems or festival system, then pick some pieces that your students might like to learn in the future or might be aiming for, or that that might be the kind of music that a student that you would like to teach is at that level of playing, and go and learn it and have some lessons on it. Go practice for a few weeks and then go and have some lessons. And that's what I do. That's what I love doing. And in today's episode, you're going to actually get to listen in on me having a lesson. So my guest teacher, I'll introduce in just a moment and I'll talk about what we're actually going to be covering. But just before we get started today, a few little updates from the world of Top Music. Firstly, our Top Music Guitar podcast is going to be coming. It's going to be launching at the start of April, and we've already got about 4 episodes recorded. We've got another 4 in the works. It is so much fun. I cannot wait to release it to you. So please tell all your guitar-loving teaching friends that there's a new podcast coming that is just for them, and we'll have more details about how to actually access that podcast in a few weeks. Now, I also wanted to share with you one of our more popular downloads. It's a free download all about modes. I don't know about you, but I used to get quite flummoxed when I encountered a piece that I was teaching a student and I realized it was in a mode, because I didn't really know how to approach it, what being in a mode meant, how to know what mode a piece of music was in. And I'd been to university and done a university music degree. And so what I did is I went and put together, it's a 2-page modes reference guide. So it'll actually have for you how to work out what mode any piece is in with confidence, And it also gives you some characteristics of each mode, the notes involved in the modes, how to use them to improvise, and how to get better generally at identifying and using modes. It's a 2-page download. It's all there for you. All you have to do is go to topmusic.co/modes, and you can listen in onto a podcast episode with me about modes and how I teach it, and then grab your free download. And finally, just to let you know that we do have a number of webinars available online. So at topmusic.co/events, you can get 3 webinars on demand to watch. They're 3 super popular ones from our catalog. But keep in mind too that if you are a light member of our Top Music Pro Academy, then you can access, wait for it, 68 webinar replays whenever you want. Fast forward, rewind, and access everything through our Top Music Pro app. I actually can't believe I've done that many webinars in the last 10 years. It's kind of crazy. So if you want access to our entire webinar back catalog, and that's 68 hours plus worth of content, and it's amazing content, then you can grab a light subscription. It's just $10 a month. It's absolutely crazy. And with that, you get, of course, our free Top Music Sheets, free sheet music each month too. So just head over to topmusicpro.com if you're interested to find out more. All right, let's get on with our My Music Lesson. So my guest today, my teacher, in fact, is the winner of the MTNA Francis Clark Keyboard Pedagogy Award, the USIA Artistic Ambassador and International Steinway Artist, Fred Karpov, who guides pianists and teachers to achieve effortless 3-dimensional piano technique over at Entrada Piano. Fred and I have known each other for years and years, and I've always wanted to explore having him teach me because he has some different approaches to what I was taught in regard to technique and rotation and thumb under. And I wanted to see what he could do with me trying to play some advanced music. So in this, which is my second lesson with Fred that's been live streamed, we're working on Chopin Opus 10 Number 1, the Etude in C Major. Also, a few little passages from 2 of his Scherzi. And also, we work on, towards the end, trills. Now, if you've ever wondered the best way to practice trills and improve your trill technique, then I always thought you kind of start slowly and do big rotations between 2 fingers. Fred's got a completely different approach, and you'll hear me work on it in this. It's so cool. I can't wait to share with him what I've been doing in our next lesson. So at the end of today's episode and today's piano lesson, I will explain how you can actually watch these lessons and engage with us, ask questions as we go on my next live stream. So stand by, but here's my lesson with Fred Karpov.
Hello to everyone who might be tuning in today to my lesson. I'm Tim Topham from Top Music, and my teacher today is Fred Karpov from Entrada. Good afternoon, Fred. Thanks for doing this again.
Yes, my pleasure. Looking forward.
Then we'll get started, and I can tell you what I've been doing and how that's been going, and then we can sort of check in with progress, Fred. Hopefully you'll see some.
Absolutely.
Progress.
Looking forward to hearing your own self-report evaluation first.
So, Fred, thank you very much for the work that you did last lesson with me. I really appreciated it. And so we had our son come down with COVID. He's been perfectly fine, but it did throw a spanner in the works because we were taking him trays of food in his bedroom and trying to get our other son to remote learn and all that kind of stuff. So it didn't get quite the practice time in that I'd hoped. However, I did make some progress, I think. So happy to show you. Would you like me to show you how I've been going?
Yeah, and with what time you did use, what were you especially focusing on?
So I was mainly focusing on really simply the hand position work. And so what I've realized from what you've been showing me is my natural inclination when I come to play something is to rotate and stretch out like this. Mm-hmm. And so I found, Fred, there was another in the second skirt, though. There's this little passage that goes... That passage?
Yes.
And so when I was playing that, I'm like, oh, no, I should stop because, again, I was like going into this position here to go. And I thought, no, that Fred would not approve of that. So I started going and practicing this. And again, just trying to keep my hand in that neutral shape. And so what it's made me aware of, Fred, is that I naturally do this stretching of my hands in awkward positions, which is obviously causing the tension that I feel. So it's great that I can now apply that to other places where I've been doing that. But what I thought we might start with is the first, etude. That's right. So we're doing Chopin etude number one, opus 10. And I'll show you how it's looking and you can give me some feedback. Does that work?
Yes. Let me just comment quickly on that, the other Chopin you showed, because on that, I think you're on the right path. Let's see what, if I play, you're looking for this passage here.
Yes,
and
that's right.
And I think you're saying that if you kind of went like that, that would be a little more twisted. So I was just testing. I just wanted to put my hands on those notes because you have the so something like that. I know there are places where I've felt that in Chopin more than any other composer that there is some bit of swiveling that occasionally may take place and may facilitate things. However, as a general rule, I think the quick check that we both did, I would still lean towards optimal alignment overall and then finding what's the shape within it. So anyhow, I just wanted to check that before we left that spot.
I'm definitely conscious, you know, even, I mean, there's plenty of, you know, this circular motion that you have to approach in Chopin or any of the harder literature, I guess. So I realize that there's a bit of give and take. It's not going to be a hard and fast rule necessarily. Yeah. So let me show you how this is looking. Anyway.
Okay.
Just trying to, again, relax as well at the end of these passages, which I never used to do. So I'll do that one more time and then I'm happy for you to jump in.
Okay. Yeah, good. I'm just looking very carefully. I don't know if we can make this any bigger on the view, but maybe, you know what? I can't pin you easily. Actually,
oh, yes,
there
sorry,
we go. I just didn't pin you. So I just pinned you and... Yeah, if you wouldn't mind just doing one more set of four measures there, just that'd be fine. Okay, so at this tempo, and actually the sync is decent too. Let me shift to mine. If I so as you're going, I mean this tempo, what do we have? This is still around like 112 or so, right? So one thing you asked about was speed, but I think in terms of how it looks right now, it looks fairly fluid at this tempo. You're kind of going about like this, right?
Yeah.
So I think that there's now a second basic motion, and then we should maybe talk about a few strategies for speed. And again, you said this was not the most conducive for lots of practice so far. So good for you on what you did already in terms of finding a shape that's continuous and not so stretched out. So as you come down, I think you can use a little bit more of a, how can we put words into this? That there's a little bit more of a chance to, you know, and Chopin wrote accents on, well, at least in the first couple measures, it sort of implied that you're going to have the, so I think you need almost, I just had a new sensation as I played that last one, that it's not really ya-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, right? It's kind of like ya-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, like it's got a little bit of, you get the momentum from that. So, and then... So what I'm interested in seeing you do is like, how do you get the efficient motion? You see how when I end up in this place, my hand is still small, right? So once you play from here to here, that's small. And so when you come here and you're rotating back, you have to kind of turn slightly to get that extra power, I guess. Can I see how you do first in slow motion, like right here, Tim, right? After you do the first four notes, how do you play that note? Yeah, I think that's, yeah, and you might think of actually give yourself this much bit of a agogic space, like it's dee-da-da-da, 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 and obviously it's not going to be that distorted. We don't want that at tempo. Nobody's going to hear that. But try that first where you go. I missed that one. I like the sound on that. Now, obviously, we don't want to bruise ourselves, but now try this where you go really fast, five notes. Good. Can you do that in rhythms now? Do the same thing going to there and going on down like that. And then that one you don't even have to play. You just go, because you'll be going, right?
Yes.
You'll go to there. I think that
now... That feels very fluid, friend.
It sounded really good. And I think what you need to do is do those in those kind of groups where you are playing at tempo, probably with a metronome on. So you're spurring yourself on. I would say maybe, you know, I would think you're probably ready right now to go ahead and put it at 160 at least. And do you have one with you right there? We could check
it. Give me one sec.
Yeah. Yeah, so when that's on, and that's a pretty prominent one, so you might do sometimes, you can turn it off while we're talking for a second, and then what you might do is, you know, just as you're checking intervals wherever they are, you can always do like, until you, and then that might be going on in the background, which is, that's a pretty prominent one, I remember those. And then make sure you're matching it on the last time, but the first time I like to go slow or medium, like, and then a little faster, and then finally,
yeah.
And if you do that and you know that it feels good, which I can tell you know when it feels good now,
yeah,
which is half the battle, I think. Do you want to try a little bit of that from this one? Go like, go, and then wait and go, I guess you could come off of the left hand, because your left hand will obscure your hearing a little bit. So you can just. Now, Tim. So Tim, what you're going to do is though, you're going to rearticulate the main beat. So you're going to go, so now you're going to play the F again. You're going to go F. This one gives you the, because you need that motion to
the
be down really.
Note as well, yeah. Oh, and the motion, but yeah, okay.
Both directions. Okay, so let's check a couple things. This is a little different than, notice how it's actually easier for the hand to fall over itself this way. This is actually an easier feeling. And let's think about why that is. I don't think I did this with you, but you know, did we talk about this, you know, when you say, I'm waiting? Was I talking about that with you? You know, that?
No, I don't think so.
Think about that. If you, like, maybe close your lid so everybody can see your hands going, your fall board. Just your, if you can't do it with there, don't worry about it. But in other words, when you do that thing where, you know, you're kind of going, I'm waiting, what do you do? Which way do your fingers move?
Yeah, always little finger to thumb,
It's always 5-4-3-2. And try to do it the other way now, 2-3-4-5.
Yeah, definitely not as natural.
It just doesn't feel right. You would never say, I'm waiting that way. And so now you're hooking into an under gesture when you're going up, and it's not going as easily, right? It's a little more tricky. And so to feel that move, I think, let's first reduce it to skipping the C and just getting the, it's right here, the, first find that, yeah. Now, take a look at your hand where it ends up after.
I know, the first time it was like this, wasn't it?
Well, actually, something else I'm seeing is that when you go up, your hand looks a little bit more like, I'll see if I can show you, see if you can notice, it's a little bit like this. So what I want to experiment and challenge you to try to do is that as you're doing anything, you're going to leave your hand in a more natural open position. That's like, so that would be here, or if I went here, or if I did, let's see. So right here, notice where the F, I ended up here. So that's where you were ending up. And your hand was ending up a little bit more like this.
Okay.
So if you can end up where this is in alignment, and these fingers should also be key. They're not playing, but if you can let them be open as opposed to in this kind of curled position, that's where you're ending up. So then when you do, Now I'd have to do this a little slowly and then faster. And now my A, finally, I'd have to do it a couple times, and then finally you get to a place where you're in open position. Can you try that from here again?
It's a five, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Try that just a little slower and see if you can notice, especially between the C and the A, how does your hand open up? That looks good. Good, go to the next C. Right there. Yeah, I think when you hit this C, it looks like your default position to go to three looks a little bit more like this. Can you see it sort of curved? So
yeah,
when you get to the, try to end up about here and see if that works for you. Yes, yes. How would you describe how you're getting there?
I'm forcing myself to not try and play right on the tip of my finger, more on the pad.
That's good. And now there's one other adjustment I'd suggest. It's how you get from this note, C, to A to C. So right here, I don't know if you can tell in this camera view, I can do it from the side too, but I'm going to, in slow motion, we're not going to do this in the etude because we don't have this much time, but it's like I'm coming up and then going to come this way. So now we're not really going to have that time at tempo, but there's this... Do you see how that there's a kind of under motion from there that you can engage? See how that works? That's right.
Yeah, it's kind of this, and then you're heading again in this direction because we're turning around kind of.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. That looks good. Try to go all the way now from the F, and maybe when you start this, let's see, I'm kind of thinking after I've gone... there, I don't know if you can tell, the fingers in the middle are releasing upward. They release on their own. I'm still getting used to my sixth there.
Yeah.
There. And so here you can go, as you prepare, you're going to play this, and you're going to play this with a good focused fingertip. You know, the fifth finger we were talking about last time, that it can be used a little bit more in a, I don't know what the right word is for this. I hate to say something like a hammer kind of way, but it can be a little more fixed than the others. Whereas it's not tense, but it's the pinky can be used in this fashion, whereas the other ones tend to play a little bit more on the pad. So if we're, you see how where we end up there, we're not curled underneath here. So I'm using a motion here where I play here, and then these are part of a big under motion. And then still stay under as you get up to the, play this one with the wrist still on the lower side. I'm gonna switch to side camera. So in other words, if I go, in other words, don't do this up here because it's too high. But if you go, if you come around, you're getting a more elliptical shape. I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
That's the idea.
And then, yeah, okay.
Yeah, good for you. Now at the end, it looks like you have one little reflex thing to kind of have your hand go like this. You kind of went like this. And so just you know, I mean, I hate to be a nag, but I think that's the thing, that if you can get used to this being the default, I think you'll find that your hand stays open in just enough fashion, not open in a tense way, but just comfortably, naturally, so that when you go to the next one, you have all that potential. There's some laws of inertia and other things here. You'll have the momentum, but without actually holding it, and actually a slight flexion, I think, might be happening in the palm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I say I do this a bit, don't I?
Yeah, just do it.
It's funny. Without someone watching, someone skilled such as yourself watching me, I would never know this. Even if I probably watched a video recording of it, I wouldn't pick that kind of thing up. But this is why I'm so passionate about encouraging teachers to do this kind of thing and have some lessons.
Well, and I have to say, you inspired me just since our last session. I ran into my colleague, who is a young woman with a DMA not long ago, probably early 30s, and she's a terrific jazz pianist.
Right.
And I said, you know, I just want to put myself, I mean, I asked about, because she wants to play for me, she's preparing a classical program, and I said, well, I would really like to finally put myself on there and say, I got to take jazz lessons. And she was so excited. I said, we were both so excited. It's like what you and I have been trying to say. One of the reasons we're doing this is to inspire professional development. I mean, we all are works in progress, right? So whatever we can gain from one another, it's so exciting. We're the lucky ones.
Yeah. Sadly, I'm really sorry, but I can't see any comments from anybody. So we can't get feedback.
Yeah, hopefully we'll be able to check our sound afterwards.
But, yeah. Well, we're enjoying it anyway.
It's part of the process. You know, I've been talking with people about that, you know, music is a process. Well, technology is a process, and we'll always make improvements. So it's definitely a good tonic for those of us who have perfectionism in our roots. So
that's right. Now, let me ask you, because I went on to some of the other passages.
Yes.
One of the previously most awkward ones is after the second time. This one.
Yes.
So I was trying to do the same movement and do and try to break up into all the different segments that you were talking about before. It's still very, it's a tricky, gappy passage. I don't know if you've got any tricks for that one.
I think as well. And you know, I think I've always found that one tough. And a couple years ago, it was when I went on leave. I guess it was about 6 years ago. I had a sabbatical. And I remember this is among many of the spots in this etude that I revisited. And of course, for most of us, the F to the C, there, that fifth between the second and fourth fingers is awkward. And so for this, I do modify things in a new way where I am using a lateral kind of positioning. There's a little bit of the under motion, but it's not as deep as this one. This one, it's so there. So I think what I'm doing is that I remember watching some video where somebody was explaining how rotation can be done. You know, if you rotate kind of in this fashion, you can make a pretty significant distance between two notes. Whereas if you did it flat this way, like try that, Tim. Like I was doing between say a C sharp and the next D flat with D sharp, with your third finger. And if you try it where your wrist is low, it feels like a huge stretch, right?
Oh, yeah, that's nasty.
But if you actually raise your wrist a little bit and then you go across with a rotary movement, you're able to release and play there. And so I applied that to this, where between here and here, the wrist, I think, can benefit from being slightly higher. Now, obviously, if we just stay up there, we run into problems. But there, I got what, 11 out of 12. There we go. But it's not fast enough yet. But that, I think that, see if you can experiment with that for just a minute, where you go to here, a little over the top. Yeah.
Oh, that was quite successful, actually.
Yeah, try another one, like an octave. Yeah.
Oh, maybe that was the trick I did.
Yeah. So then your position changed just before the error in the third octave. It was, I noticed, because these were great, and this was great. And right here, I saw something you gripped just for a second. And if you can still think of the distance, that's the interval for me that kills me is that one. So
yes,
when you practice, that's the one that has to have the extra care. But I think that slight vertical adjustment seems to help. You might add that to your list of like practice, what do you call them? Isolations, because this piece is full of, I mean, it doesn't just play itself. You do have to learn it. You do have to do it. Getting the right form is good. I feel like I watched somebody else do a tutorial several years ago and I took something away from it. It wasn't my idea, but I thought, wow, they're saying to like you actually have to really play with focus and play each note really solidly. And I thought, well, that actually is probably helpful as long as you're playing with good form. Otherwise, you're releasing everything really well. And that could work here too. But right here, you'd have to rotate and also make sure you're in good position. And eventually you can't play like that, of course. It's just the idea was that if you're really going to have every note speak, you probably have to be that careful. And then eventually, then you're going to do these, where you're going to get all these, and then.
Yeah, and that, I did try that.
And then Tim, check yourself at the F. When you stopped at the F, when you got to, sorry, I just went away. When you went to here, I just want to remind you again that your hand started to go up like this. So keep your hand like this. Let it come open. Like, yeah. And now go to the thumb. Now,
oh, and, it yeah, does, doesn't it?
You see? Yeah. So that.
Why do I think that?
Well, it's just habit. I mean, that's the thing. Yeah. We all have baggage. I mean, just imagine. I don't know about you, but let's see if I can go to this camera. You used to teach at a school for boys, you told me, right?
Yeah.
So you must have met all kinds of boys that must have been like I was when I was 14, when my posture was kind of like this, you know, it's just, and I also had hair that was long enough to like stick in my mouth. And, you know how a lot of those adolescents, they're just basically giving the finger to the world, right?
And
I didn't realize till I was much older that I was actually giving the finger to myself, because, you know, when you're young, you think you're going to live forever. You don't think about these problems. And then, but my own father had said he made two predictions. One was, he said, you're going to be an old man by the time you're 25. And in that case, I had that's when I had my vocational injury. It was because I was doing things ineffectively. I was working way too hard, and I had to re-examine how I was playing. He also, his other prediction, though, he said I would lose all my teeth by the time I'm 25. So I'm really happy to say that he was completely wrong about my dental health. But he was looking like a prophet when I was 25. Like, oh my God, I did all these things. So all I'm saying is that for you and anybody listening, is that we all develop habits. We all have our baggage. And if we're willing to look at them, and hopefully a spirit of play and discovery and the process and the ability to laugh at ourselves is really helpful, I think, because you realize, like, wait, I'm doing that. I don't have to do that. I can give that up. And there may be a better way. And that's what I think that's one of the reasons I do what I do.
I've got to say, the worst posture I ever saw for kids was, let me show you. Was, I don't know if you've taught, I've only ever seen this in boys, that they'll slouch down low enough that they can put their knees, their elbows on their knees and try and play like this. Have you ever seen that?
I've seen it. Sometimes it happens usually early on. I actually am back in the piano lab, and I got to see some freshmen this year. So, I mean, it was really fun, and it's great, like, being in the laboratory, too, because of experience. And I saw those. Of course, that's the first thing I do, because sitting is job one. It's like,
yeah,
and once they realize. But, yeah, they'll do all kinds of amazing things. So I bet you had you probably weren't doing the same kind of things like your podcast back then. You couldn't really videotape all your lessons, but imagine the wealth of things that would have.
Oh, yes. I think I've seen it all.
So anyhow.
Fred, I think we're using, I mean, exactly the same thing in the scherzo. So should we have a quick look at those arpeggios?
Absolutely.
Which were feeling much better to me. Although, of course, as I'm now in a lesson, they will fall apart. Where is it? Oh, third set, so isn't it?
Well, the reality is usually somewhere in between. You know how the student who comes in and says, oh, I've got it. Everything's great, right?
Yeah, that's right.
I set the
mark. You learn quickly not to ever say that, right?
But on the other hand, you know, the old ivory alibi is that it sounded better in the practice room. But the thing is, in some ways, maybe it did, but we all have to adjust to that. Anyhow, whatever it is, I'm sure it's important that you're noticing that things are changing too.
So we're in Chopin's third scherzo, C-sharp minor. We're at bar 240-ish.
Okay.
And we're working on this arpeggio.
Yeah.
And so I was naturally turning like this before, so I'm feeling like...
So this, I think, in instances like this, just as in the Chopin etude, in the first etude, like that one that has a sixth, This one isn't quite as big. It's only a tritone. So you know, we couldn't really fault you so much if you were, you know, sort of getting close to being ready, but it's more the attitude of feeling that you lift here. You see how I'm just kind of lifting this way very quietly, and then once I play the first one, whatever those are, that once you move from here to here, there's also room to be had in this plane. So as long as you're relaxed when you come into it, then as you go to the next octave, it's not so bad. What am I doing? I'm really off there. So there we go. I should look at the music. But you also, it's easy to fixate on positions because you are good at theory and you see that 5-7 chord, and probably in the past your hand started to migrate more this way as you saw these chords. Yeah. Exactly. So I think as long as you lift and drop with a fluid motion, you can almost get, it almost starts to feel like a two-note snare. Yeah, it looks good. Yeah.
I mean, that feels, sometimes it's just you giving me permission to, now that I've spent the time breaking up this and trying to stay relaxed, just saying, okay, now kind of give yourself a bit of movement and feel it and be a bit freer.
Absolutely.
It kind of comes together a bit more. The second one is what I find here. So we left it last 2 weeks ago. We didn't look at the left hand.
Okay.
And what I found during the week was that I don't actually ever really feel awkward in my left hand. I assume it's because I have bigger hands and I'm used to doing bigger octaves and things in my left hand, perhaps.
Uh-huh.
But I didn't feel that same need to kind of move note to note like we were doing in the right hand. But I also think that this, particularly the D flat, it's this kind of emotion again. It's a little bit like the Aeolian. This kind of thing. So I wanted to ask whether you would agree, should I be kind of practicing moving and staying quiet, as you would call it, or is it okay to always, they just kind of feel rolling to me?
I think it's a really good question. So what I noticed was, first of all, I have to say, when you did this, the two notes at a time, when you released, and there, your form looked terrific. And so then the other one, I think that sort of philosophically, the idea of where you're going, let me make sure I have the right notes here, this, because I think it goes...
Oh, there's a,
you got the C flat there. Right. Right, so, okay, so when you have this, there is something about it, like, I think you want to get mentally to the place that you were describing in the second one, but I think you might benefit from doing the work in the first, because it was just a little bit uneven. On the other hand, you can get away with it because the ear hears so much of the top.
Yes.
Right, we're able to. There are plenty of people who don't play as cleanly who still sound pretty good if their overall musical vision is strong. But you might, you know, I think you might spend just a little bit of time, like, how do you get that good? And then, oops. Can you maybe show me two of them? Maybe just seven notes to hear, and then also this one to hear.
Oh, where are you going? To the F.
That seems great. Now try one more time from the, this time start from the F. So start from the F on your thumb. Watch, I'm going to start here. So you go. Yeah, I think what seems to be more important, now that I see you doing it in groups, if you can maintain that continuous cycling of momentum, then I think it's fine to jump into that. But I would still do some sort of groupings like that in rhythms. You probably don't have to go all the way down to this with this hand, but
yes.
because you do understand it and your hands are releasing, so that's good. But I think now that you use this momentum, as long as you feel that same sweep, I don't know, try the left hand alone, the whole thing.
I know what it is.
Okay. Okay, so I think I've got it. It was what I was going to comment on about the right hand too, is because now you've got this, Tim. You're doing really well on this figure to here. Now, when you get to the turnaround, I think both hands need some work. You know how kind of like when you play a Hannon exercise, I'm going to play it two octaves apart, for example, but the problem with it often is, no, I'll play it right here, that people play kind of like this, which is very finger oriented. And if we're going to play with a really good three-dimensional motion, we notice that our hands are opposing. And so we really have different motions. The right hand is going under, over. And the left hand is going over, under. So when you play them together, it looks more like this. Or, we should probably show that one more time from the side. So that, I think, needs to happen more in your turnaround. At the top, I think you're hitting a bit of a stop sign at the top. So if you think of that, this goes... Can you show just a little bit of this? I think you can use a little more motion, actually, at the top. Now, are you able to tell which one of those figures feels easier than others? Are there any that are a little awkward?
No, not particularly awkward. I just miss some of the thumbs.
I think I see one reason why. So think about this. You have the score with you there. I'm in the... I don't know what measure that is. I don't have measure number. But at the one we were just playing that... right there. So see if you can tell in my playing right here. If I play D flat, A flat, D flat right here, notice that the first time we play the D flat, it's part of an under motion. It's going, and then it becomes part of an over motion. So now where are we going to play the C flat? Now, if you check after I tell you this, you're going to see where you play the C flat. So I'm going to play the C flat here and then come around. And I think you're playing it here. Check it out.
I'll go in here.
Right. But especially on the first one, I think that would be the key moment that I would isolate. Obviously, we want to do it everywhere. But notice that if I play this here, I would play closer to the fall board. Now, my hands, watch what I'm going to do. I'll just play on this one twice. I lied. I did it three times. But see that?
Yeah.
Try it. Okay, so now check this out, Tim. Notice that when we play the D flat on the ascending, we're going to play it closer to the white keys, closer to the edge of the black key. And then I'm going to play this one at the turnaround, coming around. So it's kind of, how do we describe it? It's kind of going like this. So now watch where the C flats are. Now I'm going to go. So come out farther on this one. See, I'm going to come quite a bit. Yeah, maybe about here. I'm close to the black key, but I'm a little more on the pad. You're used to playing more on the tip. And so, yeah, if you play here, just try these four notes. Right. That's good. Now, if I have you exaggerate for now, play the second finger more here so you can see your fingernail. Yes. Now come around in a circle to there. Make sure you can see your fingernail on the C flat. Right. Now on the over gesture, you can go this way and just come over and you won't see your fingernails as much. And now look at this, Tim, where we are right here, we're gonna come around. So in slow, we wouldn't stay here, but we're gonna come to here. So when you come up again, exactly. So it's going to, at first it's going to be, at first it's going to feel like too much motion, but but really the fingers are moving very actively from here.
I need to do it slowly, I think, first. Yeah. This, yeah, is quite, so that's what you're suggesting, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
And then to here.
Yes.
I mean, for you to pick one finger on one note in all of those notes is just remarkable. I'm amazed at your ability to find, to pick something that closely. That's amazing, Fred.
Well, I think that's going to work for you. I think that you're already getting the shape, because when you do the next one, you go to here, right? And you're almost having to do what the right motion here, but I think you can come closer to the fallboard on the way down and then come out again, right? You don't have to come that far, but yeah, that's the idea. So like this one, I think I play this closer to here on the way up. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's I wouldn't come all the way out. Yeah. There you go. Good for you. Yes.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That's great. That's, can you feel that?
Yeah, I can feel it. Yeah, it's like I've just hit that nice golf shot.
That's what it's about. And when we can get into the sweet spot, because you realize that you're using your apparatus, I mean your anatomy better, because in this way, without thinking about it, you were pulling back. And so you were using opposing muscles again. Remember how we talked about the opposing muscles, that if you use them in this way, you're flexing these fingers like that. And you want to be able to use them in alternation for the most efficient motion. So by using the three-dimensional motion, we can... I don't have the right notes there, but...
the motion's what I can see it.
Yeah, so you can see it. And so in a way, it's almost like just doing this, right? It's kind of like, I don't know, finger painting is not really it, but it should feel as easy as looking like this. And before, you could see that you were actually getting this a little bit.
Yeah.
So that was I think inhibiting this. So that's your what do you say?
I'll work on that.
Your walking papers or whatever you call them for that section. You know, we haven't hit on the Scarlatti. We have a little bit.
Yeah, let's do that. Yeah. We'll finish with that. Yeah.
That's really good. I mean, and I think I can sense that you understand what you need to do, and in a couple of weeks I think we'll have good discourse on where you go from here.
Yep. Brilliant. Okay, so the Scarlatti we're doing, for people watching, is the K96 in G. And so the thing that I was hoping to get Fred's help with is the Baroque trills, and just suggestions for making them super tidy. Because I can find that there are certain places where I just can't easily hit them every time. So I think the ones at the start are okay. Well, you can tell me, Fred, if you think I could improve. I haven't played this for a few days, I've got to say. And I tend to go to a 1 and 3 on that one, just because I'm more comfortable doing that than 1 and 2.
Okay.
And then here...
Okay. Do you want to just, we could just work on those, because trills are trills and trillums. You know, I'm curious at what you just did, because I never thought of that, but the score there, it says tremulo di sopra. So I guess that it probably is trilled, huh?
This.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And have you heard recordings like that as well? I have. Okay, good. So you're having to do that with a 1-2 trill, right?
So yeah, doing 1-2 and then adding 4 and then adding 5 and 4.
Ah. Okay, that's great. Okay, thank you. I didn't realize that. I've done this. I've featured this in a keyboard literature class recently, and I have never performed it.
I've turned Fred Kampf on something. This is great.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm always eager to learn. So I do tend to play this trill without thinking about it with 3 and 2, but 1 and 3 is totally fine as well.
Am I copying out though by using 1 and 3? Because I find, or is it just me? I find 1 and 3 much more easy, particularly on a white and then a black that's not adjacent, than a 2 and 3.
Well, you know, I don't think it's a cop out. I think I have two quick trill stories. One is about Menachem Pressler. I was 21 and I had watched. I was going to play the next day for him, and it was at Ravinia, and he had a young man playing a Mozart sonata. And I remember thinking, oh, I have so much I could tell him. I was 21 and I was taking all kinds of notes. But I also was the kind of person who would empathize on behalf of others too. If somebody was sort of insulted, I would think, oh, that was painful. So when Pressler, it was so good what he said. He said, I always tell the state of my technique by the state of my trill.
Okay, yep.
There was a pause. There was a pause, and then he said, your problem is you have no trill.
Oh, no.
And of course, I was like this. I was like...
He said it to you or to someone else?
No, he said it to another person that I was...
Oh, no.
But I was like, oh, you know, I'm dying for this moment. But this is a great story because I actually was doing a thing on trills about 2 years ago. And that person who went on to get a doctorate, he's very successful. He was in the room.
And,
we ended up, he remembered the story. And I said, well, I remember it a little bit differently. I was like, should I go ahead and tell it? And he said, yeah, that sounds like it. And so anyhow, Mr. Pressler gave us all a tremendous gift, is my point. In other words, he just called it like it was. And it wasn't about people's feelings. He didn't mean to hurt the guy's feelings. He just wanted to tell the truth. And then... another influence was Carl Ulrich Schnabel, who would say that we should have 3 good trills in our right hand and 1 in our left. And I actually have come around to, I wish I could see him again today and say, you know, I think you're right about the right hand, but I think we should have 3 good trills in the left hand too, because it just makes our whole coordination better. And so I think you should have a 1-3 trill, a 2-3 trill, and I usually like to have a 3-5 trill, but I will use the others at times depending on what they are. And there's a, you know, a wonderful passage in the Emperor Concerto that just goes on and on forever, where you're just playing and with all kinds of different trills. And I used to feel like my hand was falling off when I would get to the top of this, and I'm only about halfway right now. But yeah. And you have all kinds of combinations. But if you can do this, I don't know if you can still hear me. I'm playing over my
top. Yeah, no, I can actually.
And that, I hate to do this to Beethoven, but. You know, by this time, usually people's hands are ready to fall off, but you should feel like that you can keep going so that you've reached the crest of the trill before you come down. I'm sorry, I should stop, but there's this lovely place that comes after this. Anyhow, so that was too long of a tangent, sorry, but it was about that that your trills, you want to stay close enough to the sound point. I'll switch to the side camera, that you're not coming out of the, you know, away from the sound point. So if you're doing them with 1 and 3, there's, I think, just a little bit more rotation involved, which is okay, but I still kind of like to do a slight cycling up and down. So I would recommend that we try doing some trills on 2 and 3 on a couple of white notes first. But let's choose, I guess for the sake of ease, let's do C and D right up there, 1 octave above middle C. Yeah. And so what I'd like you to try first, Tim, is to do a 3-note, I'm going to call it a slur. Actually, imagine you can do a 2-note slur on the same note. I'm going to do it in both hands, but you just play in the right hand. I'm just showing in case people can see both ways that if I go down, up, just try that. Now watch where I'm going to go down. I'm not going to go too far down. I'm just going to go at about a medial position and slide forward and catch the other one on the way up. Okay, now we're going to go down coming up on the third finger like this. I'm going to go down coming forward. That's the idea. A little faster. Right. I can't tell for sure if it's the camera and the delay, but let's see. In slow motion, I'll go. Okay, now try it a little faster and go. Good. Good, really fast. And the other thing is, 4 and 5 should be quiet during this. I think you did pretty well, but. One more time. So make sure that you're lifting and dropping just before you play, and the fifth finger is going to drag on the surface of the keys. That's a key also.
Oh.
Okay, not bad. And then release forward. So now, Tim, we're going to go to 5 notes. Listen to this. I'm going to go. That's the idea. So eventually, the principle at playing the piano is the faster we go, the smaller the motion is going to be. So for right now, it probably looks like we're heading towards the fallboard. And we are, but it's going to be smaller and smaller. So we are going forward. That's the idea. Stay really close to the sound point so you should be able to see the wood on each side of it. So.
It's harder to do than I expected.
Do it a little slower and keep your arm weight transferred. Let's go back to this speed. Go. Right, feel yourself walking forward and then just go a little faster. Yeah, a little faster. Good, a little faster. Good, are you doing preparation? It sounds good.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
One extra one.
Good, okay.
Yeah, okay.
And now switch it, Tim. Start with the D, go. Right, it's like doing the D 3 times. It's like going like this, bop, bop, bop. Try this. Yep. And now just add the C in, but balance it with your arm weight. Yes. A little bit, a little more. Good. Good. Okay. Now let's go to 7 notes. So think of 4 C's. You're going to go 1, 2, 3, 4. Try that once. Good. Now just good. Keep balancing like this and go. Yes.
That was nice.
Yes. Do it again. Now, I just have to nag you about one thing. In slow motion, you did this. You went, you didn't really hold it this long, but it was like you went, and I want you to lift this way.
Okay.
Okay? Try it. Right. Did you notice the difference? I think you busted yourself, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
Right? You were used to doing. So let's make sure we highlight that, because that's such an important part of getting a great trill. At the last second, you were doing what so many people do, and that was you lifted at the wrist here. And so when you do that right now and feel it, you can feel there's tension at the wrist when you do this.
Yeah.
And instead of that, you let the wrist stay supple and you lift here. See how that so the upper arm has, it's really coming from the elbow joint. The upper arm is actually initiating it too, but very, very small movements. And then the wrist is the conductor that allows you to go. That's the idea. Do it again.
Yeah.
So Tim, you did go back to playing a little bit on your fingertip on that one. I think that's why it wasn't as smooth. You played more like this. And see if you can play a little bit more on the flesh. Do it a little slower.
That's a useful reminder, I think.
That was not a terrible trill, but it was a little tense, and let's talk about why. Because you started it, and then you stayed in position like this. And what I'm doing in slow motion is going a little bit forward. So.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. That's it.
And then release, and at the end, you have to somehow come out.
Yeah.
Yes, that's great.
Nice. That could not have been simpler.
Yeah. So
after all that.
So that's exactly, that's the thing. And I was just talking with a friend. It's all about letting go. By letting go, you gain control. So by giving up control, you actually gain so much control. So the same thing, you're gonna go on this way and go to 7 notes going. Try it on the D, 4 notes. And then do. Yeah, be careful you don't, remember you're gonna start with a lift and drop, and then you're gonna play more on the fleshy part. So you're gonna be right here. That's right. Yeah. And then 5 and 4 and your thumb. Yep, even your thumb, everything is released. Even though they're not working, 5, 4, and 1 all have to be loose. Not bad. Yes, yeah, much better.
Yeah, feels good.
Much better.
Feels good. Yeah.
Now you're almost
feels
at
the easy.
Exactly. That's what we're heading for. So
I was trying. I think a lot of the time we try too hard to do something.
We really do.
It should be just let your fingers do your body can do the natural thing.
Exactly. Otherwise, it's like you're gritting your teeth right before you do it.
Yes.
You
know? Yes.
And that's what when we do.
I've always done that with trills.
Yeah. Well, and there's this, and especially if you do this motion right beforehand, oh, you're really dead now.
I mean, yeah.
You get a tense trill. So there's, it's that moment of letting go. And like you said earlier about the great golf swing, like you've gone, boom, you've just hit a drive that went 500 yards.
Yeah.
And so you're going to go on to 9 notes. I see we probably need to finish up. So we'll do, where you're going to do 5 notes here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then you'll do, all those go forward. Yep.
Wow,
you even got 10 notes that time.
Yeah.
So at the last second, I think you're trying to speed up your fingers. You don't have to speed them up. Just trust them like in slow motion. It's, and then faster it's.
No, I am trying to speed up for some reason. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I'm overthinking it, kind of.
That's better. Yeah, for now, that's better. Yeah. So stay close to the sound point, and maybe we should lead with this next time to see how you're doing. You're going to stay really close here, and notice there's a slight motion forward. It's like a little slide.
Mm-hmm.
And see if you can keep them very even. You might even want to try some of this with the metronome. Or maybe you'll want to do that, whatever. And then, and just for right now, I'm not going to take you there here today, but I'll show you where we're, because we're at the hour, but I'm going to show you the end game. So we did 9 notes. The next step is doing 17 notes, which means 2 cycles. So you're going to go, and then we're going to add the other notes, and it's going to go. And you'll do this with the other number. You'll do it with things like you said you were playing with 1 and 3. You can also do it with those. And you can do it out with 3 and 5 where you're going. And eventually you get. That one's a little. You did that one. It's the kind of cycling in and out. But
so the good thing is that if I can get this right with the first few motions, I'll be able to apply that to all the other positions and motions.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then you get a continuous trill that you can play forever because all you're doing is cycling this.
I can't wait. That's my goal.
Yeah. I think we're going to get there very soon. I'll leave you with a favorite story. For me, when I was first coming out with 3D Piano, which is Entrada's predecessor, it was just a DVD series. And there was a man who has become, a supporter. I think he may be retired now, but it was an associate professor, tenured associate professor of piano at a university. And he was looking at the video about the vibrato technique, which is this motion. And he said, well, he really liked that. I said, yeah, that's really helpful for playing tremolos and trills and octaves and repeated notes. He said, oh, well, that's great because I don't have a trill. I said, what do you mean? And he said, well, I just kind of, do a little shake thing. And, I use 1 and 3 and I just kind of rotate. And I said, show me. And I had this salesy guy helping us who is not in music at all. And he said, wait a minute. How much will it be if... How much will you pay to get a good trill? And the guy's like, it was like the MasterCard commercial. I don't know, it'd be priceless. And anyhow, so we got out the workbook and we did exactly what you and I just did. And it was between 7 and 10 minutes. And pretty soon he was playing a trill just like you were doing with the continuous drill. And he goes, hey, what do I owe you? And I was like, nah. But this guy who was with me, he said, Oh, I know. He named the price. He said, it's going to be $300. He goes, but for that, we're also going to throw in a copy of 3D Piano.
The true salesman.
Oh my goodness. People think so much differently than we musicians. But the thing is, that's a story of possibility. I hope that doesn't sound like a braggy story for me. It's just I didn't know until I had an injury at 25 that I had flexors and extensors. I didn't know that I could stop working so hard. And we all have this available to ourselves. And I think you got a glimpse of that in the last few minutes there. And I think you're gonna soar on that when we meet again.
Yeah, yeah. And because I've been shown other ways to practice trills by slowly sort of rotating backwards and forwards. So what you've just shown me is a completely different approach. And I'm really keen to see how I go with it, actually, in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's exciting. I think you'll be able to do a lot of that just by remind yourself with that tapping, because you said, oh, that's a good sort
yeah,
of...
The, yes, yeah, that was a great way to approach it. Yeah. Well, Fred, thanks again. Sorry to everyone that's watching if you've been making comments. Hopefully they've been good comments because I can't see them. We can check them out when we finish. So, look, I think we might have got the audio sorted this week. We've lost the comments. Maybe in 2 weeks' time we can get everything happening and then we'll be able to involve you guys who are watching a little bit more and answer questions and things like that, which is what I wanted to do. So, but anyway, Fred, enjoy your Sunday afternoon. Thanks again for your time today. I'm really appreciating it, really enjoying it too.
Yeah, I as well. It's really great to work with you. So look forward to the next time. Have a great Monday.
Well, what did you think about my piano lesson? Being a fly on the wall, I think, is always fun watching other music teachers teach and music teachers learn. I think it's really fascinating and I hope you enjoyed today. If you'd like to watch the video of this live stream, you can access it either in the Top Music Teaching Facebook group or over on Top Music Co. on our YouTube channel. And please keep in mind that you are welcome to join us. I'm having these lessons with Fred every 2 weeks on Sundays at 4 p.m. Eastern time. That's 8 a.m. Monday morning here in Australia. And you can tune in on any of those channels. So we stream to my Facebook Top Music page, our Top Music Teaching Facebook group, and again over on YouTube. And you can be in any of those channels and leave us comments or questions as we go through. We'd love to have some more people live next time, and I look forward to getting on with my practice. Hopefully this has inspired you a little bit to seek out your own lessons with other teachers. It's such a fulfilling and important, in my opinion, part of our professional development program. So that's the end of the show this week. If you did want to find any links to those live streams and things, just head over to our show notes page, topmusic.co/episode270. And next week on the podcast, we have one of our return guests again. It's the wonderful Nicola Canton. She's back on the show to talk about her upcoming Teacher Turbo Boost retreat for piano teachers. She's got an amazing event in store for you. And if you listen next week, you can find out how you can save $10 off your already, I've got to say, already very reasonably priced tickets. But you can save another $10 off. If you listen in next week, we're going to tell you all about the event and how you can get the discount. And I'm actually speaking at it, so you get to find out what I'm going to be talking about too. All right, I'm Tim Topham, and you've been listening to The Topcast. Thank you again for tuning in, and I will speak to you again next week. For more information about this episode and to find out how to enhance your own teaching, visit topmusic.co. You'll find everything you need for your studio, from lesson plans to cheat sheets, quick win teaching ideas, and guides on how to build your teaching business. Plus, you'll be connected to a global community of the world's top music teachers. And when you're ready, join hundreds of other teachers around the world by becoming a Top Music Pro member and get access to all our bonus content and flagship courses. And don't forget to follow topmusic.co on social media and subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to it. That's all for today. We'll see you in the studio.